and welcome back to another episode of The Apex. I'm your host, Archie, and today I'm joined by Walter Heal. Walter is the founder of Historic Motorcar Workshops, which specializes in the restoration and race preparation of pre- and post-war cars, with a leaning towards French and Italian marks of that period. I've had the pleasure of seeing Walter and his team at work, and they are true craftsmen and industry leaders of what they do. Their philosophy is to conserve, preserve, and most importantly, to use these wonderful machines. And it's fantastic to have Walter joining me today. Walter, welcome to the show.
Hi, Archie. Good to be here. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Well, thank you again for letting me come and take a look at your workshop. It really felt like a bit of a time capsule. You know, I walk in the door and I'm greeted by two Bugatti Type 37s.
35s, even.
35. There you go. That's showing my pre-war ignorance already. They were lovely.
We'll get you back and teach you some more.
I'm going to need it. But I guess to set the scene then, how did you come to be involved in the restoration of pre-war cars?
A circuitous route, unlike lots of people, but sort of typically, like many people, you're sort of introduced to older cars as a child, and certainly in the vintage sort of world, that seems to be more often the case. My grandfather had a collection of sort of classic German cars mostly, and through growing up, you know, I was always fascinated by his collection of cars, and we'd go to car shows and all sorts of stuff together. And he had an amazing collection of motoring books and literature, which I would sort of avidly read when we went to stay. My parents actually didn't have a car, so I was even more sort of fascinated because we had to get public transport or bicycle everywhere. So the idea of a motor car was very exciting to me. So, and sort of through his enthusiasm, really, that got me going. And following on from that, for many years, I was involved in playing music, but my father was a violin maker. So for several years, sort of after school, I studied violin making with him. And I think that sort of idea of craftsmanship and looking through history and understanding not only the object, but how it was made, the craftsman that made it, and very much sort of looking at things from a handmade point of view has really helped me when I started working on my own cars and building up Austin Sevens and Amel cars and sort of finally getting up to the heady heights of Bugattis and things like that. Again, they were all made by craftsmen, and it's very much that sort of art meets mechanical engineering that really sort of got me excited, particularly about vintage cars.
That's kind of it there. I mean, one of the things that struck me was the lack of modern machinery in your workshop. You know, why is it so important to you to retain those traditional methods when you're working on these cars?
Yes, I mean, I think these cars were built by, as we're saying, sort of craftsmen and craftspeople. And it's very important, I think, to use those old machines, early, you know, cast iron English wheels and things. They're much better quality machine. And of course, they enable you to do your job by hand rather than just sending things out for CNCing or things like that. So I like the idea that particularly Bugatti, for example, made a lot of his things actually quite sort of simply in terms of machining, which of course enabled him to have a fairly unskilled work labor force in some areas in order to get through the work in a sort of production style. So again, that idea of simple machinery being used by sort of craftspeople is really important to me. I think it maintains the ethos of what the original maker was doing.
And some of the cars you had in your workshop had been restored previously, but you're sort of going back and undoing the restorations because they've sort of used the wrong paint, for example, or they've used body filler to cover up the dents in the car.
That's right. Yes. I mean, for many years, I think the whole ethos, the idea of restoration was very much making things better than new. And I'm glad to say that has changed in recent years, that people understand that patina and original finishes are really important to both the look of the car and actually in some cases the value. Much like you would see a wonderful painting hung on the wall, you wouldn't expect someone just to repaint all over it and say, well, it's much better now, it's nice and bright.
And one of the cars in particular in your workshop that caught my eye was a, I think it was a Lancia Delambda, probably butcher the pronunciation of that. And I believe it raced in Italian Eritrea. Like, what's the story behind that car?
Yeah, it's a fascinating car. It's a 1933 Lancia Delambda, which was a V8 engined Lancia that was with a very terribly narrow angle, 24 degree V. So you wouldn't necessarily think it was a V8 looking at the engine, but they were primarily made originally for the American market. That was the idea of a large limousine. But this one, most unusually, has been turned into a racing car, and it was done so in period in Eritrea, which of course was then an Italian colony. So the Italians had a great time there. I'm not sure the natives enjoyed it particularly, so it's a slightly mixed point in history, I suppose. But if we ignore the political angle, they had some amazing races around the centre of Asmara, and this was one of such cars. You know, they had 6Cs racing there, Alpha 8Cs, P3s, Maserati 4CMs. So it was quite a grid. And this particular car, we think, was built in the workshops of Biggie Cristoforo, who was a sort of restorer there. But many of the Italian racing drivers went out and emigrated there. So it was very much rather a sort of playground for them. And this fascinating car was found by a US serviceman stationed there in later years and brought to America, and then latterly came over to the UK. Nicholas Benwell of Phoenix Green Garage, a friend of mine, found it in the States. He's very good at turning up fascinating, wonderful old cars. And it ended up in our workshops, and we were lucky enough to, you know, find a new owner for it who then asked us to restore it.
And obviously, you know, the history behind these cars is obviously a big part of the process, but it must be quite challenging finding all the associated records. Yeah. How does that side of things actually work?
Yes. You know, history and digging into that sort of depth of history is really important to us. Luckily, knowing a lot of people, and when you start chatting to people, other people end up turning up photos. So a friend of mine, Ivo Smutny from Auto Veteran Company, you know, in Prague, he managed to find another amazing photo of the car racing. So it's sort of a very much sort of archaeological sort of dig into sort of looking through different books and finding little snippets of information, or stumbling over another photograph that perhaps someone's found of that period in time. And we tend to do that with all the cars. And I'm very keen on original finishes and preserving parts and those sort of things on the car. As I say, very much like a piece of artwork, you know, it's much more about preservation as much as it is making it a practical thing. So it's the two things, really. You want to make it safe and, you know, run beautifully and do what the car should do, but by the same time, maintain and preserve some of that history.
Yeah. And I've always wondered, have all the sort of notable pre-war cars been accounted for now, or, you know, are people still uncovering cars that had previously been lost?
I think, yeah, there are still the odd car that turns up that you think, wow, you know, no one's ever heard of that, or, you know, has been in long ownership for 60 or 70 years, or perhaps has gone through family ownership. And they've decided, you know, someone's died and it comes up. So stuff's always being discovered. And I think it always will to some degree. Perhaps it'll be more in terms of being rediscovered. But as we all know, we all have a tendency to sort of perhaps collect and buy one or too many items occasionally. And they might get stuck at the back of the shed until you have time to get around to it. And sometimes you don't. And of course, that's when they're discovered again.
It sort of reminds me of, Ettore Bugatti burying his engines in a field to hide them from the Germans in the First World War, you know, stuff like that. It's just so apt for that era, and it's just incredible. It ties into the story and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's always a million different reasons why someone pushes something to the side and we'll come back to it later. So, yeah, you're quite right.
And also the cars that are in your workshop, the cars you're working on, you know, they're getting raced as well. What are you hoping to race this year?
Yes, we're lucky to sort of help maintain a few different cars, quite varied. We don't do a huge amount of racing support, but we do a fair bit of preparation, and often often the, you know, owners have different ideas of whether they want the car to win or whether they just want the car to be, you know, shown and enjoyed and safely raced. So there's sort of slightly different preparation sort of bases based on that. But this year we've got a couple of cars in the members meeting at Goodwood to look forward to. So we've got a Type 35B and my Edwardian Star. And then we're often racing and preparing a 250F Maserati, which the owner doesn't tend to race a huge amount himself, but we're lucky enough to know some very good drivers that have helped us race it for us in the past, such as dear old the late Simon Diffie, and more recently Patrick Blakeney Edwards has helped us out with the drive as well. So, and it's really great to be able to share these cars with other people and excited enthusiast drivers that, you know, want to get the chance to drive such magnificent cars. So we're always very keen to try and help, you know, younger or drivers that perhaps have always wanted to drive a car. And if the owner is happy to do so, then we'll try and sort of facilitate that.
Is that Amel car going to be raced this year, that Le Mans Amel car?
Yeah, so we restored a lovely little CO Amel car, which was originally a works car and then built up into a team car for the Martin family, who are the Amelcar concessionaire in Paris, and they entered it into Le Mans 1933 and 34. So we're hoping we're going to return it back to France this year for the first time in many years, and we're going to take it to Montlhéry Revival. So that'll be rather wonderful to have it zimming around the banked circuit of Montlhéry, which is just sort of outside Versailles, sort of near Paris. So that's in May. So if you haven't been, you need to go. It's a very good event.
Yes, I remember you sort of telling me about that event when I came down. Is it the 100th anniversary of that event this year, I think?
Of the circuit itself, yeah. So it's a very important sort of anniversary. So we've got a few of those this year, the same with the Grand Prix Bugattis and things. So there's a few things going on this year, which is very exciting for those who love particularly French pre-war racing cars.
Does that mean then that the sort of community around pre-war cars is in pretty good shape at the moment? How does it compare to sort of 20 years ago, for example?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, like all these things, it's constantly evolving. And, you know, as we lose some people, we're lucky enough to gain some new people. And I think certainly the internet and Instagram and things are introducing vintage cars to a totally new audience, really. And it's great to see so many people sort of getting into vintage cars, perhaps through, like me, you know, through the cheaper end of the market originally, through Austin Sevens and things like that, which is such a great sort of gateway into driving some very exciting cars. And you know, you have so much fun in a vintage car. It's a very visceral, exciting experience to drive and be involved with one. Classic cars are a lovely thing, but a vintage car does have a certain sort of excitement to the whole affair.
Yeah, I think it's the story as well behind those cars that really resonates with people and appeals as well.
Yeah, that's right. And they're so usable as a car as well. You can have so much fun in a vintage car, from trials to driving tests to racing, and of course road rallies and touring. And they sort of look better the more they're used, so one doesn't have the same sort of worries that one might about your shiny Ferrari or something with a vintage Fraser Nash, for example, or something like that, you know.
Yes. And sort of, you mentioned there sort of getting young people involved as well. And I noticed when I was there that you had a young guy working for you. His name escaped me. Was it Will?
Yes, Will. Yeah.
I think he was the last apprentice to be taught by Rod Jolly, the renowned sort of coach builder.
That's right.
Are there many places where you can still learn these traditional practices? And is this sort of a bit of a concern for the future of the pre-war community that these skills are going to be lost, I guess?
Yeah, I think it had been a concern, but luckily we have things now up at Bicester Heritage. They've got their sort of heritage sort of academy, which is very much designed to help younger people get into the industry in the classic car sort of vintage world. And they're running some really fantastic courses, I believe, in, you know, covering everything from wiring to panel beating to suspension setups to, you know, but very much with an idea towards vintage and classic motoring, which I think is a wonderful thing and can only help businesses going forward and the maintenance of these cars.
I think there will always be people that are interested in that line of work, and I do believe that the knowledge can and will be passed on. And I think that guy Will is, you know, a perfect example of that. Guys like him are the next generation.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and there's actually quite a lot of them, so it's very encouraging. And I think, you know, there's always no substitute for sort of years and years of working. You know, Will's done about 15 years in now, so. At 30 years of age, he's very experienced.
I think that's it. You just need sort of that environment to, you know, foster and develop that curiosity. And I think a lot of occupations today require things to be done, you know, quickly, efficiently, cost effectively. But you can't really approach art in that way.
No, I think it is very much about sort of time serving, really, because the longer you're doing something like this, the more that you know, every day is always a school day, and there are things that you learn, and we have all sorts of different sayings in the workshop sort of bound around that sort of thing, like, you know, the thing should look meant, it should look correct with its period thing. You know, no one in our workshops ever say, will that do, you know? And it's also learning about how to get yourself out of the mess when if it hasn't quite gone right, you know, and only experience helps you do that.
One of the other things I wanted to get your thoughts on was Goodwood's decision to mandate sustainable fuels at the Revival this year. Is that a good thing for pre-war racing?
Yeah, I think it can only be a good thing. I think it's fantastic if we can run the cars, and we can so successfully on biofuels. It can only be a positive thing for our industry and for the cars themselves and for the environment, of course. So hopefully it shows that, you know, the cars are very sustainable. They're, you know, the whole idea of running an old car actually is probably more now to be applauded than anything else. If we can look after the things that we make, then we don't need to make lots of new things, which obviously is often harming to the environment. So I think the fuels thing is a great, great way of us, you know, being able to continue, I hope, using our cars and enjoying them.
Do you have to modify the cars in any way to accommodate for that, or is it already sort of set up?
From what I know of these fuels so far, I know that the octane ratings are acceptable and will run very well on a car without any sort of modification to carburation or anything like that. So I think it's a pretty straightforward swap over.
That's good to hear. Well, I think to end on, I was actually going to ask you some quick fire questions, if I may.
Sure.
What's your favourite pre-war mark?
Oh, well, it's difficult, isn't it, that? Well, I'm definitely into French cars, French pre-war cars. I've always had an affinity with Delage, always known as France's finest car. And I certainly think some of the Grand Prix cars were probably some of the finest engineering and technical marvels out. That said, it's a real, real close toss-up, of course, with Bugatti, who are, I think, Ettore Bugatti, a family of artists. So if I could pick two, that would be better. But I suppose I ought to go with Bugatti, really, I think. Thanks.
And do you have a favourite circuit?
Well, we're terribly close to Goodwood, so we always enjoy going down to Goodwood. I think it's a fast circuit, and it's a beautiful location. And it's only 10 minutes from my house, so I'm going to go with Goodwood.
That's a great shout. Yeah, I'm very close to, so I think it's one of mine, top three for sure. And do you have a dream three-car garage? What's in your dream three-car garage?
Oh, dream three-car garage, that's a good one. Well, I think it's, well, I love Bugatti Brescias, and I'm lucky enough to be restoring one for myself at the moment, so that's going in the garage. I think one has to have an Austin 7. So I think difficult to choose between an Ulster and a Chummy, but I think it'd have to be a Chummy because you can fit more friends in it. And I think I ought to be choosing probably a large saloon or something. So maybe a Voisin saloon would be rather nice, I think. That should cover most bases. If given only three, I'd rather have more.
I'm sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think I might need to take another trip down so you can show me what those cars are.
Yeah, I think you ought to. I think we ought to get you out in an Austin 7.
I think that's the way to go.
Or a Bugatti.
Yeah. Or a Bugatti. Yeah, I was taken to those, I must say. That's fantastic. Well, Walter, thank you so much for your time. And very grateful to have you on. So thank you.
No pleasure. Thanks, Archie. Yeah, cheers.